All right, Dolphins fans, doing something a little different today. In a little bit, I'm going to have the episode we recorded yesterday, or I recorded yesterday, with Max Himmelrich from the deependmiami.com. But before I get to that, I just wanted to do a little wrap-up on the Thursday night game with the Bears. Obviously, we know that the starting O looked good, didn't like the penalties, of course. But it's preseason, and I think that in the preseason I've seen us be a little bit more penalized than in the regular season, where we're normally one of the least penalized teams in the league. So I'm not super concerned about that, but what was awesome to see is it was two pretty big penalties that we overcame and still got in the end zone. The touchdown to Landry took a very accurate throw, took a perfect throw, perfect catch, you know, good route. So I'd like to see that. I do still believe that we'll be running the ball a little bit more this year. I'm not sure if we really saw that first drive, though, so let's see how that goes. The starting D, I mean, come on. When Sue was in there, they couldn't do anything. I know the first series was a three and out. The next series, they got a little bit more on us, but not much. And then most of the starting D was sitting down, having fun on the sideline, watching the rest of the game. That's the way, honestly, when you have a good team, when you watch the Packers and the Seattles of the league, that's what you see. You see them play a series or two and sit down and have fun because they had success. And that's what we need to see, and I was happy about it. I know the outcome of the game in the second half was second half was atrocious. MBT, besides that one nice throw to Bird, he didn't look great. And Freeman just, man, he was actually trending on Twitter, number five or six, if you go into the Twitter just to search, and they show you the trends. I saw him last night trending on Twitter, probably right before the game ended or right after the game. He trended because he was bad, but you didn't need me to tell you that. I know that it's not a missed field goal, but I think the out-of-bounds kick from Sturgis, I mean, come on, dude. Really? That's just ridiculous. Just no, I just don't understand how that happens from a professional kicker. And I know it's going to happen every now and again, but first half of the first preseason game, when you know that you actually have somebody they are truly considering booting you for in Franks. And in Franks at first, maybe we all thought he was just brought in to kind of push Sturgis a little, but I think they're actually giving this a true look as to whether they keep Sturgis or they keep Frank. So I think you got to do better than that, dude. Honestly, that's just inexcusable for me. The injuries are a concern. I haven't heard much this morning, but perhaps there's more news than I'm aware of about Tripp. That didn't look good. He was on the sideline with a boot and crutches. That's not good. Chris McCain, that injury looks to be less severe. I mean, but two linebackers in a core that we're already kind of concerned about, and it's not necessarily thin in numbers, but it's thin in experience, that's for sure. So let's see how that plays out. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see, honestly, on that one. I don't know where they would go if, let's say, they had both those guys miss significant time, and you still don't even have Koa out there right now. So I'm getting super concerned about the linebacker injuries. It was the same thing as last year, too. We seemed a little snake bit with the linebacker injury situation. I know Philbin, even though he's got to be happy about the way the starters played, and it's so hard to tell even from one series. I mean, it was one successful series from both of them. I guess kind of two, really, because of the three and out. They left the defense in there a little longer. You can maybe put that together as one series. But that second half could not make Philbin happy. That was some ugly football. Turnovers, more turnovers. It was just obviously we already thought, and I already thought, that they're only keeping two quarterbacks anyway. But when your quarterback play is like that, it's hard to get a read on some of these other guys and what they're doing. It makes it harder for the wide receivers to shine, even though we're talking about the bottom depths of the wide receiving core right now. The, a lot of the guys that were on the field in that second half are guys that aren't likely to be on the team, but I mean, we had MBT out there before the end of the second half. So, I mean, that's different than what Chicago was doing because, for instance, Jay Cutler, he played the whole first quarter, and most of our starting defense was already sitting on the sideline by the end of that. So he was actually trying to score against our second team defense. I got nervous and actually tweeted out during the game that I thought they left Jelani Jenkins in there a little longer than they needed to. I don't know what they were looking to see. Maybe it was just a numbers thing. I'm not sure, but I don't know what they were looking to see from him. I feel like we know what we've got from Jenkins, and that's been one of the non-question marks of the preseason, of the offseason. So overall, obviously, the starters look good. I'm hoping in the next game against Carolina we get to see them a little more, although I'm not sure if we will or not because they're doing those two joint practices leading up to the game. We may see them about the same. A lot of times, obviously, it depends on their success or lack of success as to how much they stay on the field. That's usually the way it works in these situations. But I mean, we got to be encouraged from the way all the starters looked on both sides of the field. I thought that the O-line, I can't believe I almost forgot to mention it, the O-line held up their part of the bargain. I just didn't see any major pressure coming from Chicago. Now, I'm no expert on who Chicago's players are and if they have anybody that could have really brought anything. And if they did have those people, were they even on the field? That's not me. But I know I've been hearing people seeing chatter on Twitter about, oh, we want to see this O-line play against somebody else because of the Sue excuse. Well, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. There's a difference. Sue's the best defensive tackle in the league and probably one of the best to ever play in the NFL. So it's, you know, there's a difference between a reason and an excuse. This is a reason. So last night they held up their end of the bargain in my mind. And again, they still don't have Albert out there. So I could have even been the end of the second quarter. I saw Hawkins just got burned so hard, man, so hard. But I mean, that's gonna happen. Hawkins is really like a third string guy, and he's in there with the ones and twos sometimes. Like in the scrimmage, he was in there with the ones. So we don't have all our guys back. So let's just kind of. I mean, we know Dallas Thomas is going to give up some bad plays probably because that's what he's always done, but let's just see how it goes. Obviously, we still know that we're miles away from Mathis unless there's something changed that we're not aware of, and I don't think that they saw anything last night that's making them hit the panic button and go get him, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on which way you want to look at it. But, I mean, obviously, that's my opinion. They could sign him before I even get this show out. Who knows? All right, guys, I just wanted to do a quick wrap-up. Tweeted with Oscar Hazel. He's going to be, and he's really great at breaking down players and breaking down strategy, so he's going to probably give you a better overview of the entire game than I even will. Check him out. I think he said today's Friday. Friday night, he would, so maybe he'll have a show released by Saturday. He'll have his game wrap-up, and I'm sure most of the episode will be about the wrap-up. So you might want to check that out, too. That's at Miami Pod on Twitter. So I believe it's just called The Pod Miami and iTunes and whatnot. And with that, I bring you my actual show that I recorded yesterday with Max Himmelrich from the Deep End Miami. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
What's up, Dolphin fans? Another episode of Unsquish the Fish. With me today, I have Max Himmelrich. He is from the website thedeependmiami.com. How you doing, Max?
Doing great. How about you?
I am awesome. And where are you coming from right now? Where are you currently while we record the show?
I am currently in Los Angeles. plus I'm a student at UCLA, grew up in South Florida, so became a huge Dolphins fan living there and now trying to follow the team from the West Coast.
Are you coming back to South Florida when you're done with your school?
I'm hoping to come back. I mean, I go to a bunch of the road games for the team. You know, I try to make it to as many as I can over, you know, breaks, and I'm trying to come back to South Florida to be around more consistently after I finish school.
All right, man. All right. We got some stuff to talk about today, of course. Always is. We're recording this before the Bears game, so there won't be any Bears game coverage. So we'll just talk in general about what we're looking for in the preseason as a whole. We're going to talk a little bit about the tough summer I personally feel the Dolphins have had as far as media coverage. And, you know, maybe I'm overblowing it a little bit, and maybe I'm extra sensitive. I probably am, but
I don't believe you are.
Honestly, we're going to talk a little bit about an article or two from you, and maybe a little bit about Rex Ryan picking up Mr. IK, whatever the Dutz's name is. So I'm going to get it started. All right, man. I think I'm not sure why the Dolphins feel. I just feel like the Dolphins are being dumped on, and not in large scope. But in just small little doses, the Dolphins are continuously being dumped on this past summer. I hear a lot of people don't even like the Sue signing. Have you heard that, Max?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say, I mean, some people can't overlook the contract. I think Ndamukong Suh was the best free agent signing in NFL history, to be completely honest. I think Peyton Manning came with a huge injury risk. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying in terms of what the team's gotten, because we haven't seen anything. But, you know, in terms of having a player who is definitively the number one at his position, which would be defensive tackle. And at any other time when there wasn't, you know, the freak talent of J.J. Watt, Ndamukong Suh would be in the NFL. He's the second best behind J.J. Watt.
Yeah, for sure. And if you think about it, and I think I said this when we first signed him, when I started doing the show, actually they had signed him before the show started. I said I felt like there was a top three biggest free agent signings ever. Reggie White, Peyton Manning, and Ndamukong Suh. So,
and why did the Packers bring in Reggie White to help a young quarterback with a struggling offense reach the next level by having a better defense?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, my honest opinion is when you get down to it, and I'm just gonna say it. I kind of started tweeting it out this morning, so I'm rolling with this right now. I am okay. Determined to get this going. The Dolphins do not play in the AFC East. The Dolphins play in the AFC Northeast because you've got Buffalo,
very true.
New York, and New England, and then you've got us. And let's face it, ESPN is in Connecticut, and most of them are Patriots fans. I mean, look at how many people that are bigger name people at ESPN started covering the Patriots. That was like how they all started. That's where they all went. And they
have everything there. Every day it's a different show. You know, the other day First Take was sitting on the Patriots practice field, and the next day SportsCenter's there. And then they're, you know, in Buffalo because Rex Ryan's got the big personality and Bill Belichick is an ass, and they want to cover those teams. The Dolphins, they don't bring in the views on TV because it's not like, oh, Bill Belichick is stepping to the podium when Joe Philbin shows up.
I understand that, but I mean, how much coverage does Buffalo need? Do people realize that Rex Ryan's win percentage isn't even as good as Philbin's? Rex Ryan has a lower career win percentage as a head coach than Joe Philbin, but yet he's going to save their team. I mean, come on, man. How many times have I sat there and turned on NFL Network and heard that same little blurb during a practice about Rex Ryan saying, oh, this is the best team.
This is the best team we've ever had. All we got to do.
I mean, I've heard him say that 100 times. I just like, I don't. Come on, guys. Let's face it. Go ahead, Max.
It's not the best team Buffalo's ever had. It's not the best team the Jets have ever had. And it's definitely not the best team the Patriots have ever had. But in the last 15 years, this is by far the best team the Dolphins have ever had.
100% true. And I couldn't have said it better myself. That is 100% true. But it's interesting. Now, there's been two, and probably more, but in the past few weeks, there's been two, say, computer mock-ups or unbiased scientific studies, if you will, about who's going to finish where for the season. Now, a lot of these studies that people have done over the years, and that's why they keep doing them, have proven out to be mostly correct. Of course, there are always outliers. But it's interesting how in all these studies, and all they do is run statistics. They run numbers. They run lots of different things. Yep. They consider
no
so
opinion.
Many things. Yeah,
no anger not, in Bristol.
Yeah, it's not because we're all Patriots fans, so let's decide that the Dolphins have the worst roster in the AFC East, which is so far from the truth. But it's interesting how one of them we ended up number three in the NFL, and one of them we ended up number five. And where I give it validity is that if you look at the other teams around them, there were no other out. There was no other, kind of really. That's interesting. It was the the Patriots were up there, the Packers were up there, Seattle was up there, the Colts
People
were up there,
the
Denver was up there. You know, all of those normal teams you expect to see were there, and there was Miami every time. When you take your crappy Northeast bias out of it, and you look and see that this is a good team. We have a good quarterback. We have a good defense. We have Sue. And we're ready to do things this year. But, I mean, they can keep ignoring us. Fine, whatever. But it gets me aggravated either way.
People on the networks, and I've found this to be true over a long time, they love picking apart the small error on a team's roster without realizing that there's so much else to compensate for it. I know Miami fans have been freaking out about the guard situation. But in all honesty, with Bill Lazor's offense and the quick release system that works, the Dolphins, and with the defense we have, we don't need to score 35 points a game. That's not our prerogative. We need to score 24, 21 points a game and just allow 14 because the defensive line is going to make the secondary better. How long is our Brent Grimes and Jamar Taylor going to have to hold coverage with Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake, Olivier Vernon, and Earl Mitchell coming in on the rush?
Mm-hmm.
Koumissi is going to have wide open lanes in front of him to rush into and to cover.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to have to do so much because everything. And Ndamukong Suh, the signing, makes the whole defense better. If we have to let go of Brent Grimes next season, wait, Ndamukong Suh up front so the cornerbacks don't have to be as good.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be as good when we have someone like Ndamukong Suh up front. You look at the 2000 Ravens. The greatest defense, you couldn't name the cornerbacks on that team. Of course, you had the amazing front and linebackers of that defense. I believe that was before Ed Reed arrived on the team. It was. Ed Reed wasn't on that team. So they didn't have that big name star defensive back. They didn't have a great quarterback. You look at Miami, we have a good defense. I'm not saying we're going to be the 2000 Ravens by any means.
No, I don't think so either.
It's on paper. And that offense, I really think that we can. I think that one of the guards, chances are at least one of them is going to step up. I've been very vocal that I don't believe it'll be Dallas Thomas. And I think the networks are also picking us apart for the wrong reasons. If I went on the TV and the networks were saying, I think Miami's going to struggle this year because of their guard situation, I would say, okay, that's feasible. I don't think they're going to struggle because of it, but it's feasible. But I hear them saying, it's because Ryan Tannehill can't throw the deep ball. It's because Mike Wallace couldn't catch the deep ball.
Thank you. And if I could add a stat in there.
Yeah, of course.
The percentage to Wallace, from Tannehill to Wallace on the deep ball, was 24.5%. Like to take a guess on what Big Ben's percentage to Wallace was on the deep ball?
Oh, my God. What was it going to be like?
25%.
It's the same. I was thinking it was going
to
be lower.
It's the same. Do you know what Tannehill's deep ball number is to all other receivers? 44%.
Oh, it was like
44%.
Brady is somewhere around there.
44%. Actually higher than Big Ben's deep ball number. So it's actually, have we seen Tannehill miss some deep balls? Yeah. Some ones we felt like he'd like to have back? Yes. But Wallace, he's fast, but he's not necessarily a great deep ball catcher. And then people will say, well, what about all those great deep ball passes that he got the first couple of years? If you notice the last year in Pittsburgh, he wasn't getting those because Todd Haley decided to take away that street ball format that they were playing, make him play run rail routes. And then, it was all over. Am I saying that he's going to be bad for Teddy Bridgewater? No, because you have to respect his speed. And because you have to respect his speed, he opens up some things underneath. And that's part of what, the offense was surrounded with last year, and that's part of why we went and got Kenny Stills, is we needed somebody with that speed threat and, knock on
wood. Kenny Stills is a fighter, too. Kenny Stills is going to fight for the ball.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'll have an interesting stat about Kenny Stills later on when we play our little game we're going to play. But
okay.
I don't understand the disrespect that Tannehill is getting, especially from the NFL Network. Even yesterday, they asked out of the four quarterback situations, they asked Willie McGinnis and someone else, and I wish I'd written down his name. I should have. Sorry. Bad me. But yesterday, I'm sorry?
I think it was Nate Burleson on yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it might have been. But they asked about the four quarterback situations out of the four AFC Northeast teams. I'm going to keep saying that. And they asked which one's the better situation. And literally,
oh, no.
One of them picked Castle in their situation and the other picked Garoppolo. Oh, what's he played? Like 37 snaps? Is he 30 snaps in the NFL? Really, you're going to sit there? I mean, that doesn't even sound intelligent when you say things like that. You're just saying things to troll Dolphins fans or something because they don't like the Dolphins up there. They're up north, and I know there's Dolphins fans up north. So I'm not saying that everyone up north doesn't like them. I'm saying the people
who
work for the networks.
Well, Willie McGinnis played for the Patriots, too. It's even bigger. Willie McGinnis played for the Patriots. Willie McGinnis spent half of his career playing the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he's not going to pick up.
Yeah, of course not.
When
it's just obvious bias. It's not just me complaining.
Them?
I'm sorry, go
when
ahead.
When they rank the quarterbacks and they put Jay Cutler ahead of Ryan Tannehill, yeah, and they put Colin Kaepernick right now, Colin Kaepernick had 8 games of his career where he was great and took the Niners to the Super Bowl. But then, like you said, the party was over.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I don't know how you can say in any sense that the 49ers quarterback this year could have a better season than Ryan Tannehill. And I don't know how you can look at Alex Smith and say that he's going to be any better than Tannehill. I think Tannehill's floor for this year, it's still below Alex Smith, but I think his ceiling has to be so much higher because we've seen the best that Alex Smith can do. I don't think Alex Smith is getting any better at this point.
No,
but up for Ryan Tannehill this year. I mean, if Tannehill is stagnant this year, then maybe we can worry because they've surrounded him with so much, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I think the only thing, and this is my opinion, the only thing where you could see maybe his numbers kind of stall is because I personally feel, just from looking at the scrimmages and based off some of the things that they want to do and based off the strength of our O-line, I know that sounds weird, what strength of our O-line, is we're so much better a run-blocking O-line than we are pass-blocking. And I think when we get in the
Very
red zone,
true.
When we get in the red zone, I expect to see more running this year. I'm just looking for that. So I think that could maybe bring Tannehill's
and Damien
touchdown
Williams
numbers
had 2
down
touchdowns in scrimmage.
Yeah, yes, thank you. And they were, I mean, they were right up the middle too. They were a little kind of in and outs, but they were pretty much straight up the middle, and where he just kind of went one way and then just cut back really super quick. I mean, I think Damien Williams does that very well. But
yeah, he's a good one cutback. He hits the lane and moves
real quick too, real quick.
Very decisive.
And I just feel like they're going to try and attempt to do that more, and that may bring down Tannehill's overall touchdown. And I don't even think it'll bring it down. It's probably maybe it keeps it closer to the same number, but I think that our overall scoring in the red zone is going to go up because I think we're going to try and run more. But even then, I mean, you can judge a quarterback by what happens once teams get some film on him and they start to figure him out. Once people started to figure out Kaepernick, you saw a downslide. Once people started to figure out RG3, I mean, I know there's injury factors in there too, you saw a downslide. And you've seen many times many quarterbacks have a downslide when they figure him out. That has not happened with Tannehill. He keeps getting better every year. Every year.
It's true. I mean, and the thing, while his touchdowns might not be increasing every year, it's not as much that. It's the ratio of touchdowns and interceptions that have gotten so much better. He threw for over 4,000 yards last year. Almost 30 touchdowns and had 12 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, I don't think that warrants the disrespect that the Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill specifically get in the national media.
No, I don't. I don't understand it. And then national, let's just go local. I mean, Omar Kelly pretty much trolls and punks us saying Marino was no good. I mean, bottom line, that's what he said.
Omar Kelly's, that's a career move for Omar Kelly.
Yeah,
Omar
I'm
Kelly
sure.
wants to be the guy. He wants to be the big guy who gets all the fans lit up. And, you know, every once in a while, I've just stopped engaging him on Twitter because I've just realized that there's no point in that when you really get into it and you really start getting into it, he stops responding.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he gets everyone riled up. And yeah, he loves to do that. And it's because teams care. Teams, the face of a team is their quarterback. You look at the dysfunctional teams and you look at teams like, you know, the Jets, and you say, wow, they're dysfunctional. They don't have a quarterback. And people saying Miami doesn't have a quarterback, it's offensive because we sat for so long without a quarterback. And now that we have one, we want to be recognized for it and say that the team is moving with stability because we have a face of the franchise to work with, and it's Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I'm just telling you right now, man, these people up in these national media, before we would just say it and it sounded like we were crying. I just think there's clear evidence that they are biased against the Dolphins. They don't like Miami. They like the other three teams because they're all up in the Northeast and we're down South, and they don't like us, man. They're not Dolphins fans. They probably grew up hating the Dolphins. Most of these or played in on those teams where they were supposed to hate the Dolphins. And I mean,
right.
Come on, man. Come on. You think
they're bitter?
Yeah,
they're bitter. They live up in the cold. They're bitter. They live up in the cold. What else, if you're in Buffalo, New York, if you're in East Rutherford, New Jersey, or if you're in Foxborough, what else is there to do on a Sunday in December other than go sit miserable in 30-degree weather out in the stands? In Miami, you can go to South Beach. We have a wonderful city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, anyway, man, I mean, right ahead of trying to, before the actual game start preseason and regular season, I thought I would just give it one more, you know, one more gash at the way the media coverage has been over about Miami this offseason.
I think you're right to bring it up because I think a lot of Dolphins fans sit there, and I think it's confusing to a lot of us because we sit there and we say, oh, I have to watch SportsCenter for 2 weeks to have them talk about the Dolphins for 30 seconds. Seriously, if I was a Patriots fan, I could turn on SportsCenter any day of the week, and it's like the NFL Network New England.
Yeah, it is. And it's in Bills and now Jets because Gino got his mouth punched in, you know. I mean, and where's so I'm not hearing anything about toxic locker room there, you know. Oh, toxic right. Locker room. Oh, blah 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 blah. Whatever, man.
And it's they have people calling out Geno Smith on the team for getting punched. Do you hear that? Darrell Revis said that it was partially Geno Smith's fault too.
Yeah, I heard them say it. I've heard
how
many
is that,
people
how
allude
that healthy
to it.
Locker room.
I don't know, man.
Jamar Taylor threw some punches at Rishard Matthews. Big whoop.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that was just a campground fight, if you will. That's a totally different situation, obviously. Even
yeah.
You don't see our quarterback getting involved in fights on or off the field. You know,
and I don't even care if the quarterback gets in fights. I just think it shows something about Geno Smith that the locker room didn't have his back in it. If Ryan Tannehill got in a fight and if someone started swinging at Ryan Tannehill, you better bet that half the team would be over there trying to push the other guy away because they know.
Yeah.
Because Ryan Tannehill has respect in that locker room. Geno Smith has done nothing to earn respect with the Jets.
Yeah, Tannehill actually, those differences. Tannehill has value to his team and Geno Smith does
right.
not. And I got to be honest with you. I know a lot of people are thinking that Fitzpatrick is probably a little bit more of an upgrade, a steadier quarterback than Geno Smith. And that may be correct, but for some reason, whatever it was, it, not against the Dolphins. Geno Smith seemed to have some of his best days against us, so I'm not sad that we won't see him in week 3.
He had the perfect quarterback rating in week 17 of last season.
The only season. The only one any quarterback had of the season last year was Geno Smith and against us.
Right.
Which
exactly.
is just pitiful. I mean, it just shows what happened with our defense towards the end of the year, even though people want to blame Tannehill for not making the playoffs. They want to say it's because of Tannehill. When you let Geno Smith have the best quarterback rating, the only perfect one, Geno Smith against your defense.
When you let Eric Decker burn you deep, Eric Decker was consistently lining up against our corners and just running fly routes and just running down the field and beating guys.
Yeah, we got to do better than that this year, man. I think Sue changes so much, though. He changes so much.
Quarterback doesn't have time to let the receiver get deep.
No, I don't think so, man. All right, we're gonna move on from the talk of media, and I hope I don't have to bring up media coverage of the Dolphins anymore. I hope now that the games are starting, we're just gonna get to talk about that, and I don't even have to think about it till after the season's over.
I'm I'm with you on that.
I'm just tired of the disrespect, but what are we going to do, man? So what do you want to see? Right. What are you looking for this preseason? Just in general, obviously we know the O-line, the guard play, but beyond that, what else are you looking for and you're going to be watching for on the Bears game and the rest of the preseason games?
I'm really excited for these young defensive backs. I'm really excited to see Bobby McCain and, you know, I know he just had one big day in OTAs, but I want to see what Tony Lippett can do when we throw him out there. I mean, I'm excited to see these young guys. I mean, we picked up Bobby McCain in the draft this year. We thought he was going to have to take a redshirt year, and he came out and balled in the scrimmage. And, you know, there are guys who aren't practice players and who just show up in games. You know, there are always those guys. And so you've got to look and say, who's going to show up? And I think it could. So Bobby McCain is definitely on my watch list. And the fact that Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker, neither are playing in the preseason, lets us get a look at some of the younger receivers too. I mean, we were both sitting there at practice a couple weeks ago talking about how impressive Michael Preston was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could see Michael Preston make some big plays. And the good thing about the Dolphins roster, because of the presence of Matt Moore, we actually will get a decent look at these receivers because there's not a huge drop off to our number two quarterback. So we get a talented quarterback throwing to these number two receivers. And I think we're really going to get a good look at those guys. And then obviously, you know, the inside linebackers that we picked up after the draft, you know, Jeff Luck, Mike Hull, Zach Vigil, those guys, who knows? I mean, I know a lot of Dolphins fans, you know, everyone's got to pump the brakes a little bit on these guys. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they're undrafted free agents, but, you know, it's not unprecedented. I'm not expecting one of them to, you know, come out and grab the job and then we can get rid of Koemisi and keep them. I think it's going to be, you know, we could see some flashes. And I think if you see flashes from those guys, they could be worth keeping around.
Yeah,
and I'm looking for guys. Yeah.
I was going to say, I expect a couple, one or two of those four guys that we picked up to make the 53, honestly.
Yep.
That's
my 53 prediction was remarkably similar to yours.
Oh, was it? Okay. I sent it to me, but I don't remember what it was. But I remember I had Vigil and Hewitt on that 53, not Luck or Hull.
But, the only reason I'm confident in Luck is his size. He's 6'1", 250, which is a really good size for one of those guys to be at linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, playing in the inside to be able to anchor that defense. I think Vigil, looking at it right now, is 6'2", 240.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the guy's size, and then the other side linebacker, I'm looking for him on the list. I mean, I just was a little bit worried about size, but
Mike Hull?
I don't
Mike
know
Hull's
that that's
a small dude.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike Hull is, you know, he's not huge, but, you know, yeah, he's 6 foot. I mean, he's 230. He could very well play a different position, though. That's what these guys bring is flexibility. I think that's one of the positives. A lot of people look at all the negatives of the Dolphins linebacking core. I think one of the positives is that the guys can play anywhere. You know, Koemisi's played every damn position on the line throughout his career with the Dolphins.
Yes.
At linebacker. And so you'll see, you know, if something happened to one of the players, you can shift around. There's flexibility. I think what he can do in a game where he can hit the quarterback. Because, you know, we know Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake are going to get there and that we know they can finish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem for a lot of these guys is finishing when they get to the quarterback and being able to bring them down. These guys are big in the NFL. You know, they're not college quarterbacks. They're 240 pounds.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be really interesting to see if Chris McCain can finish the job when he gets to the quarterback. And that role is going to be important because teams are going to be chipping and blocking Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh so much that – guys, I think Olivier Vernon is going to record a ton of sacks this season. I think Chris McCain can record a ton of sacks because the way the Dolphins have formatted this line, they're going to have Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh coming off the same side.
That's interesting.
So what are they going to do? They're going to flush the quarterback out to Vernon and Chris McCain's side where they can clean up shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to have huge statistical seasons. I think Olivier Vernon is going to play himself out of Miami because we're not going to be able to afford to keep him. And another underrated thing, I know it's such a Dolphins fan thing to be excited about kickers, but I'm excited to see Andrew Franks from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. But the dude can kick. He has leg. I mean, you know, he can. He hasn't shown great accuracy, but he's shown distance. I mean, they had one in the scrimmage where he hit it from like 45, and I don't know if it was Omar Kelly or Chris Perkins tweeted it out, but someone said it was good from 45, but it would have been good from 55.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got leg. And Caleb Sturgis just doesn't have – he hasn't shown me anything at all. And, I mean, there's just nothing that inspires confidence for me in Caleb Sturgis at 5'9", 190 pounds, you know, little guy trying to swing his leg through the ball and get it to go 70 yards, 60 yards through the air for a 60-yard field goal if we need it. I mean, remember the Baltimore game?
Yes.
It was brutal watching him try to do that.
Mm-hmm. I noticed too that I know for a fact that Sturgis has had one of the lower touchback percentages in the NFL last year. So that just kind of goes to some of that leg strength. I don't think he has a real strong leg. You would think when you're drafting a kicker too, I mean, most kickers are not drafted, that you'd be kicking one with a pretty good leg. Like you're trying to draft Jason Elam. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't understand that pick from
next year.
Ireland.
Robert Aguayo coming out of Florida State. He's going to be a kicker who could get drafted high. I mean, he's a really strong kicker. I mean, anyone in the state of Florida knows their games are on TV all the time. He's always nailing field goals. That could be a strong kicker. But I mean, even looking just to the Dolphins this preseason, when you think of Caleb Sturgis, and I was listening to Maurice Jones-Drew talk about this yesterday on NFL radio, that it's all about confidence in the NFL. That's all it is. And I don't think that Caleb Sturgis has any confidence left after what happened to him last year in season four. And I don't think there's anything there. And it's very hard, especially when you have a head coach like Joe Philbin, who doesn't really work with a player's confidence. Joe Philbin, he does a lot of things really well, but getting guys pumped up is not one of them. Mm. And I don't think that he's a comforting head coach. I don't think after Caleb Sturgis misses a field goal, he's going to go over and make him feel okay about it. I think that Joe Philbin, I don't think that's his strength. And I'm concerned that Caleb Sturgis mentally doesn't have what it takes. And I think there's something to be said for going young. I think that's got to be one of the Dolphins' themes this preseason too. Go young and see what happens. I'm excited to see Jameel Douglas play on the line, because what are we gaining from playing Dallas Thomas? What are we gaining? Nothing, because Dallas Thomas is a lost cause.
I agree, but they're still throwing him out there as a starter right now.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I don't mind, like, now they played some left tackle in practice, which I don't mind, because we know that's temporary. We know that's just until Brandon Allen gets back from injury. And so I actually don't mind putting Dallas Thomas at tackle right now, because, I mean, I don't know why Jason Fox isn't out there. I mean, could be injured.
I got to be honest with you. I got to totally disagree with that. Every sack Dallas Thomas gave up last year is when we played him at tackle. I think that's insane to play that guy at tackle when he can't even play guard. Except for the fact to bring Jameel Douglas in.
For the preseason.
Right, to bring Jameel Douglas in to let him play guard. Then just let Hawkins play left tackle. I don't know. I guess maybe Dallas Thomas is a little better left tackle than Hawkins. But
I mean, Dallas Thomas couldn't be worse in anything than he is at guard. So
I don't know. Maybe he could. I think last year he showed that he might have been worse.
He could. That's the scary thing. That's the scary thing. So I've got a funny story about Dallas Thomas, actually. We were there. We have season tickets for the Dolphins. So we're there at training camp, and our season ticket rep says, "Hey, do you want to come down on this field and take a picture with a couple players?" They pick one or two every day to come over and meet up with the fans. I was like, "Yeah, sure. That sounds like fun." So we get down there, and I'm waiting. Rather than Dallas Thomas, and I'm just like, "You've got to be kidding me!" So I proudly have my picture with the revolving door, formerly known as Dallas Thomas, on my cell phone. It's an absolutely ridiculous turn of events. But so what's going to happen with the O-line in the preseason, I'm kind of excited to see how Jameel Douglas looks. I think people are going to overreact to him getting beat, but I think his strength, I I actually had watched him play in college, you know, going to a Pac-12 school. I've seen Arizona State play. And he's a really, really perfect fit for a zone blocking system. And he has versatility, too, people don't realize. Jameel Douglas did play left tackle in college.
Yeah, he did in his senior year. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And he's got a great ability to move laterally. Jameel Douglas look really good in the zone blocking system that the Dolphins employ. And like I said, I think there's a lot to be said for going young. And our offensive line, you look at what are the two most important positions on the offensive line? Left tackle, well, if your quarterback's a righty, and center.
Yes.
We have two of the better ones in the league.
Yeah.
People overlook it because we have one bad position on the offensive line. You find me an offensive line other than that are strong at all five spots.
Yeah.
There isn't one. And I mean, I have a lot of hope for Juwan James because last season he looked really good until Brandon Albert went down and we had to flip him to left tackle.
Yeah, he's actually Juwan really James. I'm impressed with him at right tackle right now. I like him at right tackle.
I am too. He's been playing well against Cameron Wake. I mean, obviously Cameron Wake's beaten him because Cameron Wake is not human, but there are some plays where you can see, wow, you know, Juwan James is getting under his skin.
Yeah, yeah, he's not beating him as bad as he was last year at the beginning of camp. I mean, Juwan James has shown that improvement from 1 year to the next big time. Yeah, it's not even close. I mean, he was just spanking him last year in camp at the beginning, but then that started to change as camp went on, and I think, yeah, I'm happy with James at tackle. I'm not worried. I'm a little worried that Albert won't be ready, but it's looking better. I mean, he wasn't in 11 on 11s, but he got in, you know, got in the pads doing some drills. So I think we're getting close with Albert. He still won't see. I don't think he'll see one play of preseason time, but he doesn't need to. I just want him to be ready week
one. I'd be a little upset if the team put him out there in the preseason. They won't. I think that if they, there's absolutely no way that they do. I mean, I'm more worried about Devontae Parker being ready for week one, but I still think at this point I'm not overly concerned about that. When you look at the Dolphins also this season, when you look at the games, it's undeniable when the Dolphins looked their best last season. It was from week four to week eight when, you know, we had only one loss, which was that close game to the Packers. It was brutal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we spanked the Raiders, go to the bye week, we lose the Packers, but then we come back with possibly the three strongest Dolphins performances I've seen of the last 5-6 years, beating the Bears 27-14, beating the Jags. I mean, it's the Jags, but we still beat them by 14 points.
Yeah.
And then it all culminates in the Chargers game, 37-0 win. And what was happening in that game? Our O-line was healthy. We had Brandon Albert, Juwan James, and Mike Pouncey all on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I thought a smart move for the Dolphins this season would have been to try to keep Samson Satele, keep him at center, and then keep Mike Pouncey at guard. That's something that I would have been okay seeing. But there is something to be said for the communication that Pouncey and Tannehill have developed over the last few years. So I'm interested to see what the team can do when Albert is healthy, given that, you know, for those four games last season, because, you know, Albert started the season healthy, but Pouncey didn't.
Yeah, last year, that's true. We didn't even have him at the beginning of the season.
Right. That was, I mean, the New England game.
Mm-hmm. And the Dolphins were trying to figure out the offense, because even though we beat New England, Tannehill was a little shaky that game. You know, he was a little shaky.
He was.
Because he was trying to figure out that offense the first couple weeks.
It was no Sean Moreno that won us that game. It's no question.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to see the running backs, I should say, in the preseason. I shouldn't sell that group short, because I think Jay Ajayi was hyped up a little bit coming out because he's a big name.
One of the ones that did that. I'm guilty.
But I will say, I was excited for him too, because we all thought he was going to go in the second or third round. And we're sitting there in the fourth round and we're waiting. And it was like, okay, well, we picked Jordan Phillips in the second, and then we picked there. And then we're waiting. And then we get this big name running back. And, you know, you remember who our last fourth round running back was?
Good question. I don't remember. Lamar Miller.
Miller was the third. And, you know, it was for the same reason. I will point that out. Lamar Miller had injury concerns coming out of school.
Mm-hmm.
He had a shoulder. And I think that Ajayi being banged up early, and I think it's not but it also isn't the right part of his body. I mean, people were concerned about his knees, not his hamstring.
Yeah. I just wonder, is he, I mean, I know injury prone, supposedly there's no such thing, but I don't know. There might be such thing in my mind.
I think Darren McFadden begs to differ.
That guy could never stay
over. There are guys who have all the ability. You know, there are track stars who somehow make it to the NFL, and then they realize that this whole contact sport thing, their body might not be up for it.
Yeah.
And it's just a fact of life. There's guys who just can't do it. And I'm interested to see how that works, because, I mean, Lamar Miller added a lot of weight. I mean, we saw him this offseason. We're all looking at him. He's huge. Lamar Miller got really big in a good way. He added a lot of muscle. And, you know, he's sitting at 5'10", 224, and could probably still run a sub 4.4 40.
Yeah, I was concerned about that when I first heard that, but I've come off that concern. I think I mentioned it last episode that Dave Richard from CBS spoke with Lazor, and Lazor told Miller, get your body ready. Get your body ready. We're going to feed it to you a lot. Another reason why I think that the Dolphins are going to be running more in the red zone. That's just one more thing that kind of added to the list of if you're trying to collect evidence as to what they're going to do, was another reason. So I'm a little less concerned that he was just kind of going on his own and just trying to bulk up, as opposed to the Dolphins said, hey, we want you to get your body ready. We're going to feed you the ball more. You're going to take a little bit more hits. You're going to get some more carries. So and I'm less concerned about it now. I'm actually happy about it.
And I think the game that really you saw the Dolphins kind of try to run it more later in the season. Mm-hmm. As the season really got by. And I think the game that really showed Bill Lazor what he can do with a running back was the Baltimore game.
Yes.
I think that Baltimore controlled the tempo of that game so well.
As they always do.
I mean,
do.
We had that, as they always do, right? And mm-hmm. we had that red zone interception, and they still, at the end of the first half, they were still able to beat us because they controlled the tempo of the game. And Justin Forsett is a fairly similar running back to Lamar Miller, mm-hmm. but he is bigger.
Yes.
And I think Bill Lazor said there's something I can do there by having a guy who's big and fast. And I think that Lamar Miller is going to be ready. I mean, last season he averaged 4 yards a carry. Let's assume in a perfect world he can keep that 4 yards per carry average going, but carry the ball 100 more times.
All right,
80
man.
More times.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, man. Are you ready to play a little game? It's a little fun, a fun quiz game. Are you down for it, Max?
Okay, we'll try. Right. No promises, but we'll try.
All right, it's just a fun way to relay some information. Okay, question number one. I had the highest catch percentage in the NFL last year. I no multiple choice on this one, because obviously it's someone on the Dolphins team, so that's your multiple choice.
Got to be Jarvis.
No.
Is it not Jarvis?
It's not Jarvis. I had the highest catch percentage in the NFL last year.
Trying to think. It's got to be a few guys, because the Dolphins receivers are all different. We only have one guy from last year.
Okay. Doesn't mean he was a Dolphin last year. It just means he had the highest catch percentage last
Kenny
year.
Stills?
Yes, Kenny Stills. Ding, 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 ding.
Really?
Yes.
That's actually really cool, given that he's a deep ball receiver, that Kenny Stills had the highest catch.
Okay.
He's a fighter. I said it to you earlier. He's going to fight like Mike Wallace never would. For the deep ball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. Okay.
And he's got great hair.
He does have great hair. I definitely can't grow my hair like his, but if I could, I would, although it would probably look really funny on me.
We need to get wigs. Remember how people used to have the Ricky Williams wigs the games? We need to get the Kenny Stills wig going.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Question number two. I had the third highest yards per carry in the NFL last year.
Oh, Lamar. It's got to be Lamar.
Lamar Miller.
He was. There's so few times guys get over 4 yards a carry. It's so cool to see him do that, especially that 98-yard play against the Jets. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Yeah, he's at around 5 yards per carry. Miller's a baller. And he's been that way in his career since day one. He is a big yards per carry guy, which is why people want to see him get the ball more. Fantasy people really want to see him get the ball more.
I'm excited. I've got a fantasy draft coming up tomorrow night. I told my friends I'm going to homer big time, and Tannehill's going to be my 2 QB, and Lamar Miller's going to be one of my running backs. I told him already.
He's going to be your QB too. So who, if you're drafting Tannehill, not to get off on a fantasy conversation, but why not? So if you're drafting Tannehill as your QB too, who are you pairing him with?
I go big time. I like to go high with the QB in an early round. I think I'm probably going to go with Andrew Luck pretty early, maybe in the third round.
For me, if I'm drafting Andrew Luck, I'm not drafting a backup quarterback. That's
a
good
point. I don't know.
That's just me.
I think Tannehill gets drafted in most leagues.
Oh, of course. Yeah, he's going to get drafted if you're in a 12-team league, a lot of leagues, he's going to get drafted as the last starter or the first backup. He's in that range. He's like in the 12 to 13 range for drafts.
I've got a team league going, so I think, well, for one of them, I've got a 10, but I've got 8 fantasy leagues like any football fan does. But so I think Jarvis also, I mean, just quick fantasy note, if anyone wants fantasy information, we've got a great fantasy football, a friend of mine who does great fantasy football breakdowns for the site. If you want to read more about Dolphins fantasy football, you can go hit the fantasy link on our website, and we've got a lot of fantasy material up.
All right,
but
that's cool.
I think you're right. The 10 in that late end of the starters. And I mean, like, I'd be really confident starting Tannehill. You know, matchup based, of course. If you look at our schedule, the Dolphins schedule is so front loaded with easy games that Tannehill could help your season get off to a quick start.
Here was my thought, but there's a couple games that make me nervous in this. If you were deciding that because he's getting a 4-game suspension, because a 4-game suspension for Brady hurts his fantasy value, but if you decided you were going to draft Brady,
he's usually my guy in fantasy.
Yeah, if you were going to draft Brady, which isn't still a bad draft, but you need a guy for the first 4 games, I want to draft Tannehill. The only thing that makes me nervous is I like Washington, I like the Jags, but I'm not sure about the Jets.
I think Gus Bradley.
No, I meant like I like us playing against them. I like that matchup for Tannehill.
I think the Jags could be good this year, just me being crazy.
No. I mean, I like the matchup for those first two games because you're trying to find somebody that can replace Brady for 4 games. I do not love the Jets and the Bills. Even though the Bills are at home, the Jets are in London. So I really don't know if that affects anything.
One thing I will note about London, Joe Philbin has had an incredible career in London with the Dolphins, taking them over there. The Dolphins have played very well in London consistently. But Todd Bowles has never taken a team to London.
That's true. I mean, that's true. So he's a possibility. Like, if you want to draft Tannehill, but he's your backup guy, and let's say you want to draft Brady, so Tannehill's a guy that you could do that with. But if you're drafting Tannehill late, my suggestion is you go really quick with another quarterback. Like, if you're gonna draft Tannehill, you're the 12th guy picking. Well, you're gonna be the last guy to take a starting quarterback. You take Tannehill, then you quickly go with like Carson Palmer or maybe Eli Manning or someone else that's around the 12-13 spot. That's just what I would do personally.
And I will say Tannehill balls against the same teams every time. Mm-hmm. Tannehill's very consistent. You can always start him against the Chargers. You can always start him against the Raiders. Start him against the NFC. Whatever the Dolphins have with Tannehill been pretty good against teams in the NFC. I mean, we beat the Seahawks 3 years ago. I remember that game. This year, there was that incredible game against the Vikings where Tannehill and Teddy Bridgewater really went at it. I thought that was, within the entire NFL, one of the more entertaining games last season.
Yes.
I think that didn't get enough attention because the teams weren't really contending for anything. But if you just want to go watch a game that was constant action, that game was fun. And then he always balls in New York against the Jets. It's very similar for Tannehill, and the Dolphins play up to competition. So Tannehill will play well against better teams. I mean, he had a really good game against the Broncos, and there was that interception that was really Brian Hartline's fault. And that's what cost us the game in the end of that. Mm-hmm. And then Packers, same thing, the defense.
Yeah.
And it was essentially the same mistake 2 times. On wide receiving pass catcher.
Yeah.
So in the Packers game, I'm sitting there. One of my friends can attest to this, and I'm sure you did the same, and plenty of Dolphins fans did. You're sitting there before the snap, and you say, "Oh no, Philip Wheeler is on Jordy Nelson."
Yeah, that's not good. You can't have
that's
that.
That's not good. Exactly. And then there's Don Jones. I think it was Don Jones who was trying to cover the Lions running back who caught that touchdown pass on the wheel route. And I mean, it's not on the Dolphins offense, those losses. And I think that if you're in a PPR league, go Jarvis last year. And yeah, he's the only guy in this entire receiving corps who's played with Tannehill before. So who's Tannehill going to on third and short every time? The guy who he knows will his ass off for the catch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Jarvis. For sure. All right, we got totally off on a fantasy rant there. We're going to continue on with our game. Are you ready there? That was fun, though. I like to talk about fantasy. I've cut way back on my fantasy. Sorry to some people who had asked me about some fantasy here in the last couple of days, and I said no to them. I hope they're not upset, but I really had to cut back this year. I'm trying to do the podcast, and it takes so much of my time. And it was time to cut back on a few leagues. But all right, I got another one for you. Are you ready? I had the second highest catch percentage in the NFL last year.
Oh God, was it Jarvis this time?
Yes, that's the answer for this one, man. Landry. So we have the
two
receivers.
Cool. I love that because drops have been such an issue. I remember when we had an O-line and receivers, but no quarterback. You know, when we had Jake Long when he was playing well and Brandon Marshall, but we didn't have anyone to throw it to him. Can you imagine if Tannehill had been on that team?
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
And then we had the drops. And then we had the Sir Drops a Lot with Mike Wallace. And then
Sir Drops a Lot. That's good. I like that one.
Hartline, who actually probably had a negative yards per catch, yards after the catch average. And, you know, this year, the receiving core runs so deep. I think Chad Ochocinco, what did he tweet out the other day? He said the Dolphins receivers are amazeballs, were his words exactly.
Yeah, I couldn't really exactly tell what that meant, amazeballs, but I guess it was good.
I'm sure it's a positive. It's got to be a positive.
Glad to ask him. All right, I got one last I got one last question for you. It's a multiple choice, but there may be more than one choice. Okay, so I'm making it hard for you. All right, are you ready? One last question.
Yep.
The following teams finished better than the Dolphins in run defense last year. So the following teams finished better than the Dolphins. You got four options. It could be more than one choice. Are you ready for the choices?
Yeah.
Washington, Buffalo, Oakland, Atlanta.
Huh. I'm going to say Buffalo is all one right of them.
Buffalo's one. Continue on. There are more.
I believe that Oakland finished strong because of Khalil Mack, if that's possible.
Okay. Oakland. There are more.
There are more. Oh, no. I really don't want to say that the Redskins did. I'm really afraid that they did. Did they?
They did. As well as did Atlanta. All four of those teams finished better than the Dolphins last year in rush defense.
Defenses in the league? Jeez. Yeah. Last season was a disaster up front. And I heard some Dolphins fans, you know, before we signed Sue, we can't let Randy Starks go. We can't let Randy Starks go. I said, why?
He breaks down every year. It's halfway through the year, he stops playing good. He's done it for 3 years straight. Omar Kelly, get your head out of your butt. Stop being friends and see how these people play. The last 3 years straight, every year, Stark stopped playing good and started breaking down. And that is part of why we got trounced last year up the middle. It's not happening this year. It's not happening this year. We got sued, and that crap ain't happening this year.
And while Ndamukong Suh has had his issues in his career with his on-field conduct, Suh is the consummate professional in terms of training and getting ready for games.
Mm-hmm.
Suh is always ready. Suh is always in shape. And he's a physical specimen. Ndamukong Suh is not going to break down halfway through the season. He's going to get better.
No,
he said it's not just chemistry on offense. There's chemistry on defense. And when Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh and Vernon and Earl Mitchell and Jordan Phillips and everyone and Chris McCain and Terrence Feed and Derek Shelby, all the guys in this defense that can ball, when they start developing chemistry, watch out.
No, I agree. I think we're going to have one of the best defenses in the NFL. I keep saying it over and over again. And when you have a good defense, like a a Super Bowl caliber defense, and that's what having one of the best defenses in the NFL means. And if you can get into the playoffs, you can go a long way. Yeah. It's
a lot of Dolphins fans are scared to say it. I'm not saying we're going to win a Super Bowl this year, but this is a Super Bowl caliber defense.
Yes, it is. It is. And if you can get into the playoffs with a Super Bowl caliber defense, playing at a Super Bowl caliber defense level, which I'm assuming that if we get into the playoffs, that's what they'll be doing, then you can beat anybody, period. And last year
we
showed.
And I will say.
Go ahead.
That playoffs, the teams that are in wild card contention and the teams we would have to play early in the playoffs, if we did, let's assume we're sneaking in as one of the wild cards. Mm-hmm. I can't say we're going to beat England in the division yet. I think that the teams that we would play early would be from the following list: the Chargers, the Steelers, the Bengals, and the Colts. It would
we
be
play
one of those
all
teams.
Those teams well. We play every one
saying.
Of those teams well.
We consistently play the Bengals really well. Tannehill, the first 2 years, beat Andrew Luck and the Colts in two really entertaining games, really awesome games. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I'm interested to see what happens this year with the Colts at home when we get to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that awesome game that we almost lost to the Steelers, that we really almost lost to the Steelers on that lateral play.
God, that joke. Then, oh, I about had a cow, man. Oh, thank God for the
I
snow.
Know,
he couldn't see where he was running. Is the only
right,
reason
exactly.
we didn't lose. We should have never. It should have never gotten to that point. We got lazy, straight lazy
right,
on that play.
Yeah, and I think that was on Joe Philbin not keeping the pressure on. And then, the other team, San Diego. We've had great games against San Diego. I mean, last season, 37-0.
Yeah, we kind of got their number a little bit, a little bit.
I think so. I think Joe Philbin understands how that offense operates. And I think Joe Philbin's offensive experience lets him do that. I think he communicates a lot with the guys on the defensive side of the ball and says, this is what's happening. Because our secondary has always been good between Kevin Coyle
mm-hmm.
and having an offensive-minded coach who can relay information to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, man, let's finish up with one of your articles you had written about the kind of the recent, and when I say recent, I mean over the past years, downswing of the Dolphins and how you felt like maybe it's not as bad as we think. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think fans in Miami are accustomed to a certain level of success. I mean, I think part of that's caused by the Miami Heat. You know, they sign Shaq, they win a championship, they have Dwayne Wade for 15 years, and then they sign LeBron. It's the Heat and the climate of sports in Miami has created an expectation of winning every year. And I think that when you look, I did some advanced analysis. The reason that sparked this was the Dolphins currently, that's with the last however many years factored in, have the fourth highest win percentage in NFL history.
That's overall.
Above the 49ers.
That's overall, correct?
And then we are only 0.002% behind Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We are only, and then there are teams up there, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are number one in all-time winning percentage. They're only 0.1 above us, 0.1%.
Mm-hmm.
So you look, and you have to say, I mean, that's not really statistically significant. So you have to kind of throw that out and say, Miami still, which are those teams that were so successful? You know, the Niners, the Steelers, the Dolphins, the Cowboys. We're right up there with all of those teams. And so when you look, I figured out over the last 14 years, from 2000 to 2014, the Miami Dolphins had six winning seasons and one playoff victory. From 1968 to 1991, which is 23 years,
mm-hmm.
the Packers had one less winning season. Five winning seasons and the same number of playoff wins. Chicago, over 12 years, only had three winning seasons from 1992 to 2004 with one playoff win. The 49ers, from 1999 to 2010, that's from when Steve Young retired to when Jim Harbaugh walked into those doors, had only two winning seasons,
mm-hmm.
which includes the Mike Singletary era. Miami, in the last 14 years, has had six winning seasons. That's from 99 when Jimmy Johnson, Dan Marino were gone, when A.J. Fiedler was the quarterback, from 2000 to 2014. That includes the one in 15 season. the Dolphins had. And now the trend is Green Bay, Dallas, and San Francisco. Well, San Francisco was up until this year. We're all strong teams.
Mm-hmm.
So you look, and Miami is getting ready to do what they have to do. What brought Green Bay out of their losing stretch was not just the arrival of Brett Favre. It was a two-phase process between Brett Favre showing up and then Reggie White coming in. And, you know, Mike Holmgren wasn't an instant success in Green Bay. He had a few rough years. So you have to look at that, a couple rough years, and then he was up in the playoffs. So you have to look and say, I don't mind the patience with Joe Philbin. I don't mind the patience. I'd much rather be patient than end up like the Cleveland Browns, who fire Rob Chudzinski one season.
Yeah.
You know, I think Stephen Ross, the one thing he does understand is you can be patient until a point, and that patience is out. He was never as definitive as he was. He came in and talked to the team on the first day of training camp.
Mm-hmm.
He's never, I don't know if you remember it, and I don't ever remember Stephen Ross addressing the team before.
Not that I recall. I mean, maybe he has, and we just weren't aware, but not
right,
that I
right,
remember.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's plenty that we aren't aware of, but... And I think that I'm really, really excited to have the pressure on, because I don't think there was pressure on Joe Philbin. I think the media put pressure on him, but I don't think that affects guys. Once you get to the NFL, you got a pretty thick skin. But I'm really excited to see what Joe Philbin does this year with the pressure on. And I think Stephen Ross set us up to win now. He said, oh, we were bad at run stopping last year. Well, there's a guy who can fix that. And he pays him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in Miami. And I think that part of what the Dolphins have to do is develop a kind of cool about them, kind of like the Miami Heat did. You know what I mean? Like that, the Miami element to it. Miami's,
you mean that swag? You're talking about the swag?
Right, the swag. The swagger that the Heat had.
Are you referring to the word swag, sir? Is that what we're talking about here?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
It's that swagger that LeBron brought to the Heat, walking in saying, I'm the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want Dominic Sue to do for the Dolphins. Walk in and say, I'm the best at what I do, which is play defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to show you that. And I think the price we paid for him, J.J. Watt got, then you're saying that, okay, based on inflation from free agency, which you obviously have to factor in, then you're going to have to pay the guy a little bit higher than you might have paid someone who was already on your team. And I believe I read this, that the Lions offered him as much money and he didn't take it. So, and Dominic Sue wanted to come to the Bucks.
Interesting. I mean, that's interesting. I didn't even know that Detroit, I don't know how Detroit would be able to afford that when they already have a $100 million quarterback and a $100 million receiver to also have Sue. I kind of figured that was always a reason they couldn't. They had to decide. You can't keep $300 million guys.
Right. I'm not in favor of big money receivers. Last few Super Bowl winners, who was the last one to have a receiver with a $100 million contract? It just hasn't happened. But there are plenty of guys who have had there are plenty of Super Bowls that have big money defensive guys, mm-hmm. and those guys are able to help your team win. I think that a good quarterback can take a lot of receivers a long way. Tom Brady's the best evidence of that we've seen. You know, he takes the Brady, I call them the Brady Bunch, you know, all of the receivers, all 12 of them, and he helps them win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Des Bryant and Tony Romo or Andy Dalton and AJ Green that do it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's very true. All right.
And so back on,
no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Back on that, just for a second, back on that with the Dolphins, I think it's everything changes over time. And I think there's a lot to be said for patience. Mm-hmm. And there are a ton of Dolphins fans. I know that stupid Emory study said that Dolphins fans are the worst in the league. I think that you and I can both attest to the fact that that's not true based on how many people we see sitting out there in the hot Florida sun on a Wednesday morning in August just to watch their team practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you and I can attest that the fans will be rewarded soon for their patience.
I feel like this is the year we're getting rewarded. Personally, yep. I don't feel like we're one of those teams like, oh, they're a year out. No, I feel this is the year out. We're out now, and this is it. That's just how I feel about the season going into it, man.
It's time. That's all it's got to be. It's time.
Yeah, yeah, certainly, man. So tell us about your website, thedeependmiami.com, and where everybody can reach you on Twitter and all that good stuff.
Yeah, The Deep End, I started it earlier this year, about a little under 6 months ago. And we do really regular analysis for the Dolphins. I mean, pretty much every day we've got something up, every other day. And we do fantasy articles, we do breakdowns, we do lists. You know, we've tried to take a little bit from every sports website. You know, we have GIFs. We make it a modernized format to present the material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to make it flip through slides like Bleacher Report does, because I think that's god-awful. But
it is kind of annoying sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So we have lists, one site, and you can reach us at thedeependmiami.com. You can go like us on Facebook, Deep End Miami. Twitter, same thing, The Deep End Miami. I answer any question you tweet at me on Twitter, and I'll get anything on Facebook too. You know, we try to be really interactive with the fans. I have people helping me with the site. So we're always reachable, and we want to be a resource for Dolphins fans. I say the blog is by fans for fans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it is. I mean, I don't pretend to not be biased on the blog.
Understood.
I say I'm talking about the Dolphins because I love this team. I'm not afraid to criticize them. I think that's one of the beauties that people have now in the 21st century, is that we have a platform to be able to, you know, air criticism about the team. You know, we're very open about that on the site, and, you know, but we do present fun material for fans,
mm-hmm.
because it's all about the Dolphins. Because like we were saying, first thing in the show, coming full circle, the national media doesn't give us enough. And I felt like we really needed a site to do this kind of analysis. And I think that so far, the site, the people I have helping me on it have done a great job, and it's been really awesome so far. You know, we're loving presenting fans the kind of material that they are entitled to as NFL fans, but don't get because of the national media bias.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah.
All right, man. Okay, everybody, if you want to tweet me on the show, Unsquish the Fish, it's at Unsquish the Fish on Twitter, of course. My Facebook page is Unsquish the Fish. I am also currently the Dolphins super fan representative on the podcast Next Fan Up, which you can find in iTunes, or go to Blog Talk Radio Next Fan Up. You can also find them on Twitter at NFU Podcast, or go to their Facebook page, Next Fan Up. I also wanted to give a little shout out to a new Twitter handle, although they're not new to Twitter. This handle is the Fen Troopers over in the UK. They're a group of very excited Dolphins fans.
They're great Dolphins fans. I love those guys. Those guys are awesome. Everyone should give them a follow.
Yeah, and if you give them a follow at Fin Troopers, that's FIN Troopers, give them a follow and support those guys. I called them kind of like the Gorillas of the UK, and I'm sure anybody who knows who the Gorillas are know what I'm talking about. Yes, exactly, exactly.
They're awesome, the Troopers, and they do a lot, you know, even more than, you know, the Deep End. That's what I named my blog after.
Mm.
I wanted to honor those guys, and I actually totally by coincidence did it the year the Deep End is being brought back. I mean, it was out of the stadium for a few years,
mm-hmm.
and I heard from Jeff Rudman, who is Stripe. He's the guy who paints his beard,
mm-hmm.
and he is one of the most genuine, honest, nicest people I've talked to. He called me when I was starting the blog, and he said, you know, I just want to make sure you're representing the fans well. He gave me his blessing to use the name. And going forward, my blog is not directly connected to the Deep End,
yes.
but it is for fans in the same way. And I think those UK, the Troopers guys, the Dolphins have one of the biggest NFL followings in London. And I think the guys like the Troopers are a big reason, because they're hosting a big party. If anyone from London is listening, they're hosting a huge get-together before the Dolphins-Jets game. And I was mad about that the Dolphins-Jets game, because I always loved that home game, got moved to London. And then I realized how awesome it is for those guys,
mm-hmm.
to get to see a real divisional game instead of, like, Dolphins-Raiders.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for those guys in the UK to get to see that, and I'm sure that they're going to be incredibly accommodating and have a wonderful event.
Oh yeah, it's going to be awesome. So go out and support those guys. Listen to the podcast, Next Fan Up podcast as well. Go to thedeependmiami.com. And if you want to email the show, it's unsquishthefish@gmail.com. And definitely, if the best way to get me, though, is on Twitter. Like, if you want to find me, I'm always
all
on
of us.
Twitter.
Dolphins Twitter. Dolphins Twitter is hopping, people. Get
yeah.
on.
Yeah, I'm all about the Twitter. You know, I that's just where I like to hang out and talk to fans. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a great day, and fins up.